Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. In the United States, it's estimated that about two-thirds of the population read at an eighth grade level or below. And when it comes to health information, most Americans have the ability to read and write at the fifth grade level. And certainly while this might contribute to literacy, health literacy issues, it turns out that even well-educated people sometimes have difficulty understanding what they're reading and what they're hearing from health professionals. So what are the consequences and costs of resultant poor healthcare literacy, and what's being done to improve that? My guests today are Barry Weiss. He's professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine, and he's also an affiliate professor of public health here at the Department of Health Sciences at UAA. Also with us is Rhonda Johnson. She is chair of the Department of Health Sciences at UAA. Both have been involved in working with health literacy and patient-provider communications for a number of years. You can reach us if you have questions or comments here in Anchorage at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as always, you can email during the next hour at line1, spell it out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, line1@alaskapublic.org. Rhonda, welcome. This is your first time to have the appearance or have an appearance on Line 1, so it's nice to see you here.
Great. Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Barry, welcome back. It's been a couple years, but we did this before.
Yep. Thank you.
Well, let's start, Barry. I'm going to hit you right off the bat and tell us what we're talking about when we talk about health literacy.
Yeah, there are many different definitions that people use, but probably the most widely used definition is that health literacy is the ability to obtain, get, read, find health information and use it to make good decisions about your health. But it includes not just the ability to read. It includes the ability to understand health concepts, to understand numbers. For example, someone tells you if you have a colonoscopy for colon cancer screening and the chance of injuring your bowel is 1 in 5,000, do you know what that means? So it's understanding the ability to read, the concepts, the numbers, and everything that goes together to allow an individual to say, I know what to do about my health or my medical problem or whatever it is.
This can be a quite broad spectrum, as you've implied. Given permission to do something. I listen to podcasts all the time. I'm trolling for ideas. But, I was reading somewhere where a lady signed permit to do something, and she really never understood it. And she regretted later. She says, I gave him permission to do what?
Right.
And then I was a much more complicated issue is listening to experts from Switzerland who've decided not to recommend mammography as a screening, and in England, who all using the same information came to completely different results. Much, much more complex issues.
Right. And how is the, if you have health experts in different areas totally disagreeing on what to do, right, how does an individual make their decisions? And at best, they would understand what the controversy is and decide what's good for them. But if they can't understand what the controversy is, they can't make good decisions.
Mm-hmm. So how'd you come to this area?
You know, it's a long story, but I guess the short version, many years ago, I remember handing a mother, she was in with care of her kid, and I handed a mother a little handout on whatever the kid had, ear infection, strep throat or something. And this mother, who was the only person in my whole career who ever said this to me, handed it back to me and said, I can't read.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't think it ever crossed my mind until mm-hmm. that moment that, mm-hmm. yeah, what do you mean you can't read? And now I know from the national statistics that lots of people can't read, and lots of people can't read complex information. Mm-hmm. And it's a really widespread problem. But that was my initial wake-up call, was that one woman who had the bravado to say it to me. Most people mm-hmm. won't say to their physician something like that.
Yeah, and looking at this information again, I would say I can't recall anybody in 30-plus years of doing this mm-hmm. telling me they couldn't read, and yet I'm sure I've missed them. I didn't understand, and they're embarrassed to talk about it, and they're saying, okay, mm-hmm. and they're not getting it is what you're saying happens often.
Yeah. People who can't read, or it's not even can't read. Very few people can't read anything,
mm-hmm.
but many people can't read information at a difficulty level that they need to understand what's going on in healthcare. And I always say to my residents, if you ask a patient, do you understand? They'll say, yes. If you say, you have any questions? They say, no. But then they go home and they, you know, they talk to their sister or something about all the questions they had that they didn't understand what the doctor said. Mm-hmm. So, you know, patients are, maybe they're intimidated by physicians to speak up when they can't understand something. Mm-hmm. But that's what people need to do.
Do you think it's just in healthcare? I'm just thinking, I'm talking to an automotive specialist about how my car works. I mean, sometimes I'll say, yeah, tell me that again. Or sometimes I say, why don't you think like a doctor does about this thing my own mind? Get a better history.
Yeah. I always talk about there are many different kinds. There's literacy, the ability to read and write.
Yeah.
And then there is topic-specific literacy. Right. And we're today talking about health literacy, but the examples I always use is auto mechanics literacy. There's physics literacy. There's, if you go to the moose's tooth, there's beer literacy. What are all those little initials after the different kinds of beer? You know, and you can be a professor of physics at the university who can tell us all about the mathematical formulas that govern black holes, but you may have no clue about the arteries that supply blood to your heart.
Right. You know?
And people make the assumption that just because somebody has good education, they have good health literacy, and that's not necessarily true. I can't. Examples I use are the New England Journal of Medicine, one of the premier medical journals. If you plot out the reading level of the text in there, it's at about the 11th grade level. Why then do we give patients handouts about their medical problems that are written at the 15th grade level? And similarly, although I can understand the New England Journal of Medicine written at the 11th grade level, if you give me a physics book written at the 11th grade level, I may not know what it's about because I don't understand the concepts. So it's a very much more complicated problem than just can you read or can you not? You know, do you know the concepts? You know what you're talking about, or what's being talked about? Do you have the ability to realize when you don't understand something, the nuances? But all of that adds up to patients not necessarily having the ability to make good decisions about their health, care for themselves properly.
Rhonda, I suspect Barry's involved with the Department of Health Sciences at UAA because of you and your interest in this and kind of recruiting him here. Are you guys involved in a large way in thinking about health literacy in the department?
I think we're very fortunate to have Barry as an affiliate with our department. And it's not quite 10 years now that we've been working together. We have a shared Arizona connection. In between my time here in Alaska, I spent some time working with a graduate program in public health in Arizona. And when I came back to Alaska and after I finished my doctorate and was with UAA, we were talking about, is there a way to do some interesting work around health communication, health literacy? Before I came back to the university or to the university in 2004, I worked as a primary care provider for about 20 years, a family nurse practitioner. And like Barry and like many providers, sometimes you're just really aware that the communication isn't happening as you hope. And so we had the opportunity to bring Barry up here as a visiting professor of health literacy and to do some provider training here in Anchorage and also up in Kotzebue and kind of around the state with different providers. And we were also looking to do a small research project. I think back in 2007, 2008, we got a small grant from the UAA Center for Community Engagement and Learning to look at cancer communication. And we wanted a way to we're going to interview providers to see what they thought of their communication style with Alaska women around cancer. And we wanted to have a simple way of assessing health literacy. And Barry's been very involved in one of the most simple, clinically applicable ways to look at this. It's called the newest vital sign. Instead of, and it relates to, as you were talking about, Barry, not only readability, but numeracy, but whether you understand numbers, like how many servings in something.
And, or what 10% means.
What 10% means. And right. So the exciting thing about this newest vital sign is it's an ice cream label. And most people outside of clinical settings have seen nutrition labels. And by answering six questions, you can get a sense of whether people are really understanding what you're talking about. So we collaborated on this initial project. And I would say the other thing that came out of that was the other part of the project was asking patients to look at the existing health communication materials in the offices, and did they understand it? Did they think their mother would understand it? And when I went through the ethical review process at UAA, because it was a faculty project with graduate students, they said, you're talking about literacy. You should connect with the Alaska Literacy Project. So if any of these people have literacy issues, you'll be able to refer them. And I had been involved with literacy programs in other places. I'm a returned Peace Corps volunteer and have been a tutor with refugees and immigrants in other places, but I had never connected with the group here. And the Alaska Literacy Program, led by Polly Smith and staffed by a bunch of volunteers, we had the opportunity to meet with her, and I said, you know, it'd be interesting. Let's check out this newest vital sign with some of your adult students and see what, if anything, they can understand. And perhaps not surprisingly, you know, these were adult learners, limited English proficiency, perhaps very literate and competent in their own fields and in their own languages, but not in English. And the newest vital sign, like most health information in the U.S., is in English. And every single one of the students there scored zero on this very quick assessment of health literacy. And we realized also that very few of those students had any connection to the healthcare system at all. When we asked who their providers were, they didn't have one. So that was how we started the Anchorage Health Literacy Collaborative, based at the literacy program, Barry as a consultant, other community partners, and the focus was really, let's assume that we know nothing, that our patients coming in and our students know nothing. How do we make the communication a little better, a little simpler, a little more effective for everyone involved?
There's a number of questions that came up from what you just had to say, Rhonda, and I want to come back to that. But we do have a caller, and I want to take that phone call. Diane, you're on line one.
Hello.
Hello. What can we do for you?
I recall a few years ago that some of the elementary school teachers in the sixth grade would teach first aid to the students, because there is some slack time at the end of their sixth grade where they could learn this. And I think it's very important, because since then, I don't think they do it routinely, which I think is a mistake, but since then I've learned of at least two high school students who died because the people they were with at the time of an accident did not know how to stop bleeding. And that's a real shame. And several years ago, I was on the Health Curriculum Review Committee for our health and PE. And one of the things that the whole committee stressed is we wanted elementary school children to begin learning anatomy and physiology very early. If kindergartners can learn all the names of all these dinosaurs, they can learn 200 bones. But there was not the materials available for the students to begin learning, say, the second or third grade. It was pretty pathetic. And I wish there were, but there's also a lot on the web. The most important thing I think we can teach anyone is to separate the wheat from the chaff, because there's a lot of bad stuff out there.
Comments, Barry?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'll start by saying health education would be great to have in public schools. I still remember my first month in medical school when they taught us what diabetes was. It was like, oh, that's what diabetes. So I'd gone to college. I had a grandma with diabetes. I had no clue what it was. Mm-hmm. And then CSA, what about the rest of the world? You know, I didn't learn about that till medical school. There are a lot of basic concepts about health and common diseases that it would be great if everybody knew. But what I've seen is health education in schools has been intermixed a little bit in people's minds with sex education in schools, which is a controversial topic. And health education in schools has dwindled away quite a bit over the last decade or two. I'm not really aware of any sound programs in health education. Interestingly, though, the Anchorage Literacy Program that Rhonda's talking about started teaching people who had limited literacy skills, limited English literacy skills, how to read, how to speak English using health concepts, health topics, turn out to be a real grabber. You know, you can have people read about Jack and Jill and Spot and try to teach them to read, or you could teach them about breast cancer and try to teach them to read. And the latter is a much more of a engrossing topic. So
because it's more pertinent?
Pertinent to individuals and more interesting.
Right.
So it can be used. But yeah, you know, it would be great if the public knew more basic health concepts, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And it's not being taught in schools like it should.
Mm-hmm. Well, the school district that when I was in the Health Curriculum Review Committee, this was a K-12 program. It just wasn't a three-letter word course. And it went everything, did everything on environmental health, consumer health, anatomy and physiology, and at one level, parenting and you know, and all the other things that you think of when you think of health, but it was much, much more. And I don't know what's happened to that program. It's a shame that they have not kept it up and not expanded it. And of course, parents always have the option of opting out for sex ed, which is only a very few weeks of the whole program. And in junior high, it's supposed to be a whole semester long.
Mm-hmm. That, can I follow up on Diane's comment or question?
Sure.
It made me think of two quick things. One is that there is a lot of national action plans to kind of improve health literacy and health communication. And in some of those plans, they do talk about the importance of K-12 health education, because not everybody has access to health care providers. And as I think you implied, that we need to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff. Even in everyday life, everyone is faced with a lot of health information. And some of it is perhaps not scientifically based or not very credible. And unless people have some kind of media literacy or communication literacy to be able to figure out how do you determine the quality of the health information you're getting, not only from your healthcare provider, but also from the TV and movies and brochures.
Dr. Oz, yes.
Yeah, you really have difficulties. So I think you really raise an important point that it's not just about, it's important to have effective and important health information and health education in all of our systems.
Right.
All right, Diane, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye.
Appreciate it. Barry, let's quickly get back to you and just try to put this in perspective. What do we know about literacy in the health literacy in the United States?
There have been two surveys, one done in the 1990s, one in the 2000s, not one being done in the 2010s, to my knowledge, in which the U.S. Department of Education went around the country assessing tens of thousands of people's literacy skills in a multi-hour in-person interview, assessing both general literacy and literacy as applied to health concepts. And from the data generated in that big study, we know that about a third of the U.S. population has actually literacy skills and health literacy skills that are just way below what you need to get along and make decisions about your health. And that those numbers in the 2000s survey were worse than they were in the 1990s.
Really?
Yeah, so things were deteriorating.
Wow.
And I think that's part of the reason we're not seeing another survey, because the government doesn't want you to see that things have gotten worse still. And these surveys are on English language literacy, so they're not looking at Spanish, they're not looking at other languages. And I frequently in Arizona, I get the question, what about Spanish literacy? And yes, there are some people who can read Don Quixote in Espanol, and their literacy skills are excellent. But there have been smaller studies of non-English speaking populations in the United States, and their literacy skills in their languages is actually worse than the English language literacy skills of the American population. I always say, the people crawling under the fence from Mexico are not college professors. They're people escaping persecution and war, and their literacy skills aren't any good either. So we have about a third of the population overall that has poor health literacy. But if you look at some individual segments of the population, the numbers are most people. In the national study, people over 65, most of them have limited health literacy skills. If you look at the Hispanic population, most of them have limited literacy skills. The American Indian, Alaska Native population, it's almost 50% have limited literacy skills. So you know, when physicians and nurses and other health providers are seeing patients in front of them, the new recommendations, when they're not all that new anymore, but the recommendations are to use universal precautions. You should assume that people aren't going to understand what you're talking about unless you explain it to them in simple terms. And one of the examples I always use, if I'm talking to an audience of health professionals and I ask the following question: how many of you have received a phone call from your sister, mother, brother, friend saying, I just went to the doctor and I didn't understand what the doctor was talking about,
right,
and wanted you to translate what the doctor told them? And every single hand goes up, because right, that's a universe. The minute you go to medical school, everybody, your family's calling you, you know. What? And then when you get that call from your grandmother, you explain it to your grandmother in simple terms that your grandmother can understand. Why didn't the doctor do that in the first place? Because when his grandmother calls, he'll use simple terms. You know? Mm-hmm. And so there's a major problem, I think, from the point of view of health professionals, of not being able to step out of their health professional role and use explanations and words that everybody will understand.
You know, what comes to my mind is I've been very active in teaching about science and what we're learning about how science works, but it's increasingly aware of what we're with cognitive science, how the brain works and how the mind works. And one of the things that we constantly are learning is that we think we're better than we are, which probably gets back to, I'm going to guess, the studies when you were asking professionals how well they communicate, they probably thought they did a heck of a lot better than we really do.
There's been a bunch of studies looking asking physicians, do you think the patient you just saw understood what you said? And the physician, and this has been done with internists, family physicians, obstetricians, a bunch of different populations, and the physicians mostly say, well, of course they understood. And then you interview the patient, and the patient says, I had no clue what the doctor was talking about.
Mm-hmm. So, I hate to get into this too much, but I'm a big critic of how we get paid in this country, and it discourages time. If we had more time, how much would that help this problem, in your opinion?
There's two answers to that. If I had more time in the exam room with patients, yeah, I'd be able to take more time and explain things. However, the time is there. There's been some small-scale studies looking at that. If physicians, and again, I know physicians best because I'm a physician, if physicians stop telling people all these complicated concepts, they'd have a lot more time to describe simple things. You know, again, when I'm doing audiences of physicians, how many of you have drawn pictures for patients of the anatomy of the coronary arteries or the anatomy of the bowels? And, you know, and everybody's, oh, of course I do that all the time. If you stopped explaining people some of these more complicated concepts, you would have more time to explain to them the really important thing, which is, what do you need to do? Not the, you know, the structure of the middle ear when a child has an ear infection, but how do you give the antibiotics properly to the child? You know? And so more time would be nice, but the time could be used in a better way.
Let's take another call. Peter, you're on line one?
Yes. In fact, you've just covered some of the things that I wanted to speak about, which was communication from health professionals to patients. For the last couple of years, I've volunteered for the health fair for a long time, but lately I've been doing what is known as checkout, where you get to talk to people about the tests that they've ordered and the concerns that they've had from a little mini survey that they fill out. And there's a wide discrepancy in health literature. And I found out, it was interesting, that it really doesn't have to do with formal education. At Bean's Cafe, some of the people there were more knowledgeable about their health situation than some of the people who worked at the big oil companies and obviously were being paid exceedingly well and obviously had probably doctorates in the various sciences. So just the idea that it only belongs to people of low education, I don't think comes true.
Right. It's more common among people with lower education levels, but you're correct. It is not exclusive to people with low education level. Why would the engineer with a doctorate working on the North Slope on a, you know, an oil thing know about how to use an asthma inhaler? I mean, it's just, it doesn't match, you know, and they need to learn whatever they need to learn to take care of their problems.
Yes. Now, the other thing I found, and this is just a sort of a rough idea, which I don't have any statistics to support, But I found out that people with type 2 diabetes seem to have a much better knowledge of their condition and how to manage it than people with high blood pressure. I have no idea why that is. The other thing is that we get a lot of people who are getting tests which probably seem to be fairly inappropriate to me. For instance, a 25-year-old healthy male getting a PSA and a TSH, and he had no idea what the tests meant or what they were for or what he just happened to see them on the form.
Well, it sounds like the doctor needs education there.
So, my whole point is that all of us in the health field need to be able to speak to people in terms that they can understand.
And that the mantra that a lot of health literacy people use is explain things to patients like you would explain it to your grandmother. You know,
right.
You will do that with respect. You'll do it in terms that will be straightforward that normal people will understand. And I've had doctors say to me things, well, if I explain things real simple to patients, they're going to think I'm insulting them. Well, you're not going to insult your grandmother by explaining something in terms that she can understand. But that's really what needs to be done. And that would be to health providers listening here, that would be my message. You know, explain things to patients like you would explain them to your grandmother or to your friend when they call you on the phone for an explanation about what happened in the office visit.
Yeah, I think, you know, well, I always finish the sort of mini interview with my question, which says, do you have any questions for me? And I don't get a positive response in the sense, no, it's okay. But sometimes people will suddenly pop up with something which I think I've covered, and they didn't understand.
Right. I mean, even a better line is, tell me what questions you have for me. Not do you have any questions for me, but what questions do you have for me? And actually, another line I heard a colleague told me, they say to patients, when you go home, what questions are you going to ask of your husband? You know? And then,
questions you wished you would have asked.
Right. And that sometimes brings out questions, right. You know. But right. you have to right. make Good. People feel comfortable. You know, I've even said to people things like, my last patient told me I used a lot of big doctor words and they didn't understand me. I'm worried I may have done that with you. Is there anything I said that you didn't understand? You know, make them feel like I'm the one making the mistake, not they're the one who can't understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're really covering the issues that I have concern about, and I thank you for taking my call.
All right, okay. Peter, have a good day. Thanks for your comments.
Bye.
It's hard to believe for me, but and I do this every day, but not every day, every Monday, but we're halfway through the program, so we need to take our usual break. I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Toll free 1-888-353-5752, and our email line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, and then we'll continue our discussion on health literacy with Dr. Barry Weiss and Dr. Rhonda Johnson. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1, Your Health Connection on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection from KSKA Anchorage. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. My guests today are Barry Weiss. He's a professor of in the Department of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Arizona College of Medicine. He's an affiliate professor of public health at the Department of Health Sciences here at UAA, And also Rhonda Johnson, she is a doctor in public health, and she's a family nurse practitioner, and she's also chair of the Department of Health Sciences at UAA. Both are intimately involved and for a long time been involved in health literacy and communications between health providers and patients, and that's what we're discussing today, the state of health literacy in the United States and the consequences that derive from that, which we really haven't talked about, which I think I should ask some questions about, and I'll do that in this half of the show, and then how we might be able to improve that, which we've kind of circled around a little bit so far. You can email questions to us at line1@alaskapublic.org. That's during the next 30 minutes or so. Our local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. We do have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And again, the email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. And one more reminder, if you're listening between 9 and 10 p.m. on Monday evening, that's a taped rebroadcast. We won't be available to take your calls or emails. So, Dr. Weiss, what about suggestions that you think are important for patients to think about or advice you might give them on how to improve their health literacy, both in the office and when they're reading about information?
You know, there are studies that indicate that if you interview patients a few minutes after they leave a doctor's office, they can only tell you back about half of what they were told in the doctor's office. So you cannot expect people to, you know, retain everything the doctor, nurse, pharmacist, whatever, told them. But what I think patients have to expect of themselves, that they're not going to walk out knowing they didn't understand something. So that when, I'm going to use the doctor again as the example. If the doctor explains something to a patient and the patient doesn't understand it, they need to speak up. You know, and I think patients are afraid to do that, but they need to. And I'd have to say, in my experience anyway, I'll respect a patient for doing that. You know, if someone says to me, "Whoa, you know, tell me that again. That didn't make sense." It's like, "Ooh, I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean to do that. Let's go over it in a way that's, you know, easier to understand." And you know, so I think that patients have to set the bar for themselves to say, I want to walk out of this office knowing I'm not going to remember everything I was told, but, you know, making sure I understand what I remember. And most clinicians are going to respect you for doing that. And you know, will it take them a few extra minutes? Yeah, but what's the point of taking care of a patient and making a bunch of recommendations to them if they walk out and they don't know what you were talking about? No mm-hmm. physicians want to do that. So, I mean, that's probably one key. Asking why is it important to do that? You know, I have to give my kid antibiotics twice a day for 10 days for a strep throat. Why? You know, well, it's to prevent heart problems, you know, and a lot of people will just go and follow the instructions and they don't even know why they're doing it. So I think, you know, ask the questions. Don't be afraid to ask the questions. And then I think it is important, and Rhonda can talk some about this too, you know, when you go home, there's nothing wrong, and it's appropriate to go get on the internet and read a little bit about the problem you have. And you may come up with things that, ooh, my doctor didn't tell me that, or, gee, the new guideline says this, and the doctor did that, and maybe the doctor did it for a good reason. Maybe the doctor was not aware of the new guideline, and go back and challenge the doc. I mean, I've had, and you know, I don't find that offensive if a patient does that. If a patient comes into me and says, you know, I was reading this thing, and it says some patients with my condition get treatment X. What's the story? You know, so you could say, yeah, but not you because X. Or, oh, okay, we could talk about that. That is a possibility. And, you know, and I know, Rhonda, you wanted to talk some about, and this is probably a good time, about how do you pick out the good information online, because that's a hard one sometimes.
I think a couple of quick things, and I'll definitely add I think another technique that patients can do and providers can help them with, besides assuming that they're looking up information, perhaps some of them are online, is to ask them to say, so what did you learn today? What are you going to tell people about this? Because I think that's an opportunity to pick up when they have a misunderstanding of what's happening. And it doesn't take that much time either.
Right, the teach-back technique. Yeah. Asking a patient to say, you know, I've told you a whole lot of stuff about what you need to do with your insulin doses. I want to make sure we both understand what we're talking about. Tell me what you're going
to
do.
Can you show me how to do the EpiPen I just showed how to use, which becomes extremely important.
A lot of times people don't do that, and they assume that people understand. And like Barry says, they may not understand a key step until they get home. And I think the importance of of recognizing people look for information in other places and having some assume that they do that. Just like we assume that everyone wants useful information, assume they do that. It's helpful to give people suggestions. And I know that's a great thing that you did, Thad. You have on your website today some websites that you feel give credible information.
Right.
One of the projects that the Anchorage Literacy Collaborative got involved with National Library of Medicine support this last year, was to train some of the peer language navigators, or people who are adult learners of English who are interested in learning more about health and helping their community learn about health education. We collaborated with the medical librarian at UAA, or the consortium library, to do a series of trainings on where is good information, first in English, because that is probably the way you're going to see it from most healthcare providers. But the other important thing to realize is we live in an incredibly culturally diverse society. Anchorage has over 100 languages in the school district, and there are a lot of resources that are credible from the NIH and the National Library of Medicine and PubMed Plus, for example, that have credible health information in over 100 languages. And recognizing that English is a second or third or fourth language for a lot of people we see is important.
A website that ends in .gov is likely to be credible, you know, and those are going to be from, you know, various government agencies, you know, just as a simple rule of thumb.
What about this issue of consequences? What do we know? We've identified, it sounds like to me, that there's a lot of work to be done and that we're not improving, at least in one survey, which is not what I would have expected to hear. But what are the consequences? Help us understand why this is important.
There have been numerous studies on what are the consequences or what's associated with low health literacy. And people with low health literacy have less health knowledge. They're in the hospital more. They cost the system more. They have worse health outcomes. This has been shown over and over and over again in different parts of the country, in different parts of the world, with different diseases, just over and over and over. And so, yeah, there are big consequences, and they're not surprising. If you have poor health literacy and you don't understand what you're supposed to do, you know, you're going to take your medication wrong. You're not going to follow through on the dietary recommendations you have to make. And, you know, some of it is the health provider's fault. You know, eat less salt. What does that mean? You know, okay, I used to use 25 shakers of salt. Now I'll use 24, you know. The health providers need to be more specific about what people need to do. But we do know that lack of health literacy results in worse health outcomes, you know, more health costs, more hospitalizations, more emergency room visits, things that all of which we'd like to have go down.
Let me just take 1 second again to remind listeners, if you have questions or comments about health literacy or any the information you've heard today or want to make comments, there's a couple of ways to get a hold of us in the next 15 to 20 minutes. Our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our email address, lion1@alaskapublic.org. And our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Dr. Johnson, perhaps this is a good time to talk about some of the things that are being done locally, particularly in the very near future, that listeners may want to participate in or know about.
Okay. Well, I think I want to make sure that everyone knows that next Wednesday, August 6th, we're having a summer seminar in health literacy that'll be held at Providence. And you can Google summer seminar in health literacy and find more information about that. But it is a first time that the Health Literacy Collaborative is trying to bring together some experts, both local and national, to help us all learn a little bit more about health literacy. And Dr. Barry Weiss will be one of the featured plenary speakers. Another plenary speaker is Helen Osborne, who's nationally known. She's based in Massachusetts, but she has done a lot of work and was the founder of Health Literacy Month and does a lot of, has written a very influential book about it. She had the opportunity to hear about some of the things happening here in Anchorage at a national conference in California last year when the presenters from the literacy program came to that conference to receive an award for their work with peer language navigators. Again, these are sort of cultural brokers and people who are interested in helping particularly culturally diverse communities understand basic health information. In addition to those plenary speakers by Helen and Barry, we're going to have several breakout sessions, and there will be continuing education for doctors, nurses, and social workers. But we are also hoping that community members and people who are interested in this issue will also come. And there will be breakout sessions around health literacy issues in clinical settings. Barry will be talking about those issues. Also, working with some of the populations, as Barry suggested, who are more likely to be vulnerable for the bad outcomes from limited health literacy, and that would be elders, recent immigrant and refugees, and people who experience intellectual and other disabilities. And Dr. Thad Woodard is also one of our breakout speakers. So if you're interested in learning more about this topic, I encourage you to come join us on Wednesday. I think the other comment I wanted to just make is limited English proficiency is one of the areas where the outcomes, as Barry said, in national and international studies show that health outcomes are poorer. And one of the great opportunities with the literacy collaborative here is recognizing it's primarily a literacy organization. The first year we tried to bring more resources in to the students there. We collaborated with Providence to bring the Mamavan out and did breast cancer screening. And we identified some abnormals and hooked people up with regular care. But we also recognized that that was sort of a Band-Aid. And what we really needed to do was to try and get more health information to people who were not otherwise interacting with the healthcare system. And that's how the effort to do the health literacy classes that Barry mentioned earlier came to be. And also, this is when we first started with the peer language navigators, identifying some people from the language groups that are served at the literacy program to get some additional training and to bring other people in from the community to health fair opportunities. And if there are people who are listening to this who would like to be involved in that kind of offer or that kind of effort, the Health Literacy Collaborative meets about once a month, and you can find more information on the website for the Alaska Literacy Program.
I think that a lot of the public is not aware that there are literacy programs in most cities in the United States. And many individuals who read poorly and have trouble understanding whatever it is, magazines, health information, sometimes just kind of keep it to themselves and never do anything about it. But in fact, you know, there's a great program here in Anchorage, the Alaska, or the Anchorage Literacy Program. There's one in Tucson, Arizona, where I'm based. They're all over the place. And there are places where you can go work with people who'll up your reading skills, make you more functional in the world from that point of view. And it can be done in an aura of privacy. Nobody knows you have poor reading skills except the people who are helping you. And, you know, for people listening who would like that kind of assistance, it's just a phone call away.
Yeah, and I want to give credit to all of the, or at least several of the key partners in the Anchorage Health Literacy Collaborative. Certainly the ALP, or the Alaska Literacy Program, has been key. They've hosted us and co-chair the collaborative. The Providence, many of its units have provided support, volunteer education. The chronic disease self-management training was offered through the ALP program. As Barry said, and it was alluded to earlier, adult learners are very interested in pertinent, actionable information. So the interest in health content is great. And the YWCA, we moved on from having the Mamavan come to the literacy program to hooking people up with a CDC-funded breast and cervical cancer screening program so that if there were abnormal results, they would be in a system that would cover the coverage. The Anchorage Neighborhood Health Clinic has been a great partner. And the Family Practice Residency Program. There's lots of partners, and if there are...
These are all systems that can channel people into the literacy program if needed.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that part of what we're hoping with the summer seminar next week is that we can, we'll have some exhibitors of people who are interested in this topic, but also we would love to engage more people in this issue because we started out, I think, with the idea that health literacy is an individual problem, it's a patient problem, but I think nationally and internationally it's recognized as a system problem. The Affordable Care Act looks at some of these bad health outcomes because of the way we do things now and has really put the burden on health systems and health providers to improve, as well as patients to be more active and engaged in their own care. I think also I wanted to say that not every provider thinks they're doing a great job. And we need to think about how we can support providers to do a better job. It's a pretty challenging environment to be a provider these days. One of the collaborative members who was working on her thesis in medical anthropology at UAA several years ago, she interviewed providers who participated in healthcare encounters with refugees here in Anchorage. And she interviewed the refugees, and she wanted to ask them what makes a positive patient-provider encounter. And the providers all understood that she interviewed that it was hard when there were language and cultural differences to make sure that communication was taking place. And yet there weren't supports sometimes in the health system for providers who wanted to take more time or wanted to access the cultural information. And for the refugees and or immigrants, what did they want from providers? They did want respect for their cultural traditions and an understanding that not everybody has a basic background in a biomedical view of their body. And how can their health understanding be accommodated in a typical short clinical encounter? So I think it's not just that providers are thinking they're doing a great job or that patients are coming in thinking that nobody's going to understand me, but I think we need to put systems in place that support everybody to communicate better.
Now, there are some health systems use what they call patient navigators.
Right.
So you walk into the clinic, the cancer center, whatever it is, and they say, this is Maria. She'll be with you for the day. And Maria follows you around, and every time the stupid doctor says things in unintelligible terms, Maria says, what he really means is, you know, and I went to an oral surgeon once who had a patient navigator, you know, and the oral surgeon says, I'm going to take some x-rays, and she says, he's going to take pictures, you know. I mean, she made it so it was very clear no matter what, yeah. But that's a, you know, that could be out there and is in many health systems now, a way to help people understand and get past the problem of clinicians being unable to think in normal words.
Barry and Rhonda, the way my mind works is this. I'm sitting here listening to you guys, and I'm saying, you know, it's one thing to really get a patient understanding in the office. And then they go out like me, and they forget most of it. And so I need to help them understand where to get more information, and then I got to help them understand how to evaluate that information. And where is that taking me? And so I'm back to, you know, really what we need is to get good relationship with our patients because it's not the one visit. It's the repeat of it. It's the reports, the trust. It's the, you know, I really care about you. I'm trying to give you the best advice. I want you to understand this. So I'm back to, hey, you just treat people well, like your grandmother. And things kind of flow from there.
But there are more concrete things. One, I've been working on the last couple of years on a project with a federal agency called the AHRQ. It's a healthcare quality and research organization that the government funds. And the AHRQ put together what's called the Health Literacy Toolkit. And it's intended for medical practices. And it has, I think, like 20 different tools in it. And you can go through them one by one by one and implement these tools in your practice and change the way your practice operates. And in response to the comment you just made, one of the tools is follow-up. You know, you send the patient home with a bunch of instructions, get them on the phone 2 days later and say, hey, you know, we told you a lot of stuff. We're concerned maybe we weren't clear. you know, any problems with any of the stuff we told you? What are you doing with the medicine? And show that interest in the patient and get some verification that they understand what's going on. And if they don't, well, hey, we need to get you back in the office and talk about this some more. That's actually very easy to do, not real-time consuming to do. And there's umpteen other tools in this toolkit that have similar motivation, you know, to make sure people know what they need to do.
We, you know, I don't want to beat my own drum, but I don't understand why we don't call patients up more often. We do after almost every visit within a couple of days. And we're talking about acute care mm-hmm. visits. I learned from it, you know. I didn't happen like I expected. Have I made a mistake? What's going on? Why is the rash there now? Is it the end? You know, mm-hmm. things that they may or may not have called about. So we spend a lot of time in that follow-up. And I do. I think it lets them know that we really do care. It's educational for us. It's educational for the parents, the patients, I mean. And I'm a pediatrician, so mm-hmm. it's the parents often. But it's a model with chronic care and asthma in particular, and right. maybe in diabetes and stuff. But it's easily done and helpful in all realms.
It could be done. You know, there's a program in Tucson I'm familiar with. When people are discharged from the hospital, there's an arrangement whereby the health system goes out and makes home visits. Mm-hmm. You know, next day, mm-hmm. how you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. another home visit in a week. Don't just throw people out, you know.
It seems like we're seeing more of that. Part of it's the patient-centered medical home initiative. I don't know that there's any criteria in that about changing how you do education, but it mm-hmm. certainly is an opportunity. And one thing we haven't mentioned are giving people written instructions, follow-up about asthma care plans or anaphylaxis care plans, mm-hmm. or showing people how to use their
equipment. But if the written instructions are at the 15th grade level, people are just going to throw them in the garbage.
You're back at me, aren't you?
No,
yeah,
but that,
yeah, you're right.
But it's
you're
true.
Right. Yeah,
but,
you're
and,
right.
it, and just to follow up on that, too, I mentioned that, you know, the health literacy is also part of this larger issue of health communication. And at the federal government level, there is, you know, the Healthy People 2020 initiative that has really set goals for the nation in terms of population health. And the health communication, health literacy objectives, which there are some, also include information technology. And I think that's one other thing we want to mention in terms of how providers communicate with their patients. A lot of offices are moving towards electronic medical records. I know that in my local providers here, I have the opportunity to log in to my patient website,
right.
Which
right.
assumes, of course, some familiarity with computers
right.
and access to one.
Right.
But I've noticed that I have access to that kind of follow-up that you're talking about. My husband has a chronic disease. He has an email relationship with one of his specialist providers.
Right. Right.
And that, you know, figuring out how we bill for those services is important. And some of those initiatives are part of the Affordable Care Act and Patient yeah. Protection Act.
We're getting a little off the subject, but I agree with you. And I think Blue Cross, as of next year, are going to start paying for telemedicine and some of this work. We have patients send in photographs of rashes all the time now. And even videos of sleep disorders, for example.
Yeah.
I've had videos. You know, you know, there
but
are lots
that,
of
isn't words. That interesting? So the patient can send you a photo or a video, and then you say, ah, I know just what you're talking about, instead of having them explain it in words. But what we do when we're explaining to patients mm-hmm. is we explain it in words instead of giving them pictures and videos,
mm-hmm.
which would work just fine.
I actually don't think it's off topic to that, because I actually do think that the technology advances and the multimedia and the fact that even people who may be low income and or not so resourced often have a smartphone and often have access to internet. We just need to acknowledge that people have all these sources of health information and help them process it and mm-hmm. be able to use it to make good health decisions.
Right. There's no reason. I've worked with health providers who will send an email to the patient the day after they're there that contains, you know, a reiteration of some of the important things, pictures, a link to a video for how to do this, that, or the other thing. That's a great way to go mm-hmm. instead of just telling people things and sending them on their way.
Hopefully we're moving in that direction. I just was really amazed that we didn't show any improvement in the studies.
Well, in the Now, has there been improvement in the way practices operate? That wasn't studied. But has there been improvement in the literacy skills of the American public? No, there's been a deterioration.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we are coming close enough to the end of the program. I've got to say thanks to you guys. It's been wonderful again. It's an extremely important topic. Hopefully our listeners got some good information and good hints out of how to talk to physicians. Maybe I should ask one more thing. What are the two things you want us to remember when we finish
two
this?
Things I would have a message for health providers and a message for patients. And the message for health providers is stop talking in medical gobbledygook and explain things to your patients like you'd explain them to your grandmother in a respectful, simple, straightforward way that everybody would understand. And to patients, it's don't accept medical gobbledygook explanations. If you don't understand what your doctor or whatever is telling you about, you need to speak up. And most doctors are going to welcome that. They're not going to be put off by it. So don't be afraid to say, hey, I didn't understand what you're telling me. Tell me in words I can understand.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Rhonda Johnson, UAA.
Yeah. I guess I would just say is that we should acknowledge that there's a lot of health information out there outside of the clinical and healthcare provider systems. And being skeptical and checking into the credibility of that information is important. Your providers can be part of that. And then I guess the other quick message is there's a lot of people already interested in this issue here in Anchorage. And if you would like to be more involved, we would welcome your engagement in that. And we hope to see you at the summer seminar in health literacy.
There's a lot of work gone into this summer seminar. It should be very interesting and is a way for people to link with others who have similar interests.
Thanks, Dr. Barry Weiss and Rhonda Johnson, very much. Appreciate it. Before we go today, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about the Children's Festival hosted by the Department of Health and Human Services coming up Saturday, August 9th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Delaney Park Strip. This festival, it will provide some recreational opportunities, some health screenings and educational activities, as well as nutritional education. The Alaska Museum of Science and Nature, the Fire Department, and many others will be there to help provide health education, recreational, and nutritional services to children and families. So tune into your health and why not enjoy a fun and healthy day at the Children's Festival on the Delaney Park Strip Saturday, August 9th from 10 to 1 p.m., hosted again by the Municipality of Anchorage. Next week, Lion One is going to take a summer break. We'll be off for a week, and Sound Medicine will air August 4th. I'll return Monday, August 11th at 2 p.m. with a discussion about the brain, emotions, and behavior with Anchorage neuropsychologist Dr. Deborah Gideon. Remember, that program repeats each Monday evening at 9 p.m., on FM 91.1 KSKA. Pat Yak is our chief content officer at Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron, audio engineered today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.